driven by my buddy Mike. We're fishing out on the basin for alligator walleye pike. He all brought his
Guess who? This can only be one thing. For better, for worse, it's Captain Kale with Fishing Brain today.
I have my own theme music.
Yes, indeedy, you do, my friend. This is...
I feel like either a really famous pitcher or a wrestler. I have my own music when I walk in.
Heaven, when you're fishing with the guys. Yeah. All right. Okay, just a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys there. Okay, don't you know, we got a heck of a show for you right now. We got Captain Kale. He's going to be telling you all the wonders of the fish down here in the South Florida waters.
Yeah.
Don't you know, I for sure. All right. So, we got you out of the smorgasbord, and we're back here in the studios.
Get back in the studio today.
So, have you been on since the tent sale? I don't think so.
No, I haven't been on since...
It's been a while.
I think it was the last week of February.
Wow. And you're usually, like, always here. I mean, but we've been busy. We've boat shows,
charters,
fishing talks,
boat shows, fishing talks, tent sales, you name it.
Now, you were working with Charlie from Quantum that
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
So, how'd it go? What happened? I mean, I barely got to see anybody.
We did exceptionally well.
Well, you guys were doing, 10 to 50% off?
We started everything at about 15% off. We had a lot of the old stock stuff that went for 50% off.
Yeah, brand new stuff, 50% off.
So, I mean,
you guys were slammed. I got to go by and got in there and out of there, but you and Charlie were working your butts off.
We did. I yelled at you the night before because we literally had a truckload of optics reels.
Yeah.
And I'm saying it literally because we had to put them in the back of Greg's truck in order to bring them around to the front of the store.
Yeah, he's like, easily. What the heck are you doing? Why do you have so many of these reels? But now, the thing about it is, optics is one of Quantum's, you know, lowest price reels. And the 20, they go from like 20 to...
$20 to $40.
Well, no, the optics are $20 to $30, I would say.
Yeah.
From the smaller ones up to the biggest ones are like start like 22, go to like 26 or 28.
But yeah.
The strongest cheap reel.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, the toughest little inexpensive. I shouldn't say cheap. I should say inexpensive, but it's cheap, and they last.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do a great job.
And when you're selling them for $17 a piece, you come buy four and never buy a reel again.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, so, you know, it wears out in a couple years.
Yeah,
okay, 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, you know.
We had over 100 optics reels.
Yeah.
And I think we put 6 back on the shelf.
Yeah. It was an amazing day you guys had there in Quantum.
We sold...
But you're the one that
quite
tears,
a few cabos.
You're the one that tears down the reels to, you know, when somebody brings one in,
yeah.
We can do a little bit of cleaning and lubing and stuff.
Yep.
And you kind of know the ins and outs of all these reels. And that little optics, it doesn't have anything special in it, but it really seems to go good.
Nothing special. And if anything, I think that the optics is the poster child for who gives a crap how many bearings are in a reel.
I've maintained, and I'm actually going to be, I have to have some reels made because we've got these beautiful colored rods coming in, and we're not going to have reels to match them. So we're going to have to produce a few of our own reels just to match the colors.
Right.
But I'm telling the guy, he said, what do you want, 13 ball bearings? I'm saying, no, I'm thinking like 2, maybe 4.
Yeah, I think the optics is 4 ball bearings.
And that's what you really want in an inexpensive reel. You want 2 on the main shaft, 2 on the handle, and as few as you can possibly get, because if it was up to me, people wouldn't buy them if I told them it had two ball bearings, one at each end of the main shaft.
I really
don't want the ball bearings in the handle because the first little bit of salt, sand gets in there, the ball bearings start breaking down.
And that's what they do. I mean, what good is a 14 ball bearing reel when 12 of them are in the handle?
Yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Remember that Akuma we had on the cutout? There was, what, four in the handle, and I mean, everywhere they had, yeah. And all they did was start doubling them up.
Yeah, they just start stuffing them anywhere. I mean, do you really need to double support your handle? No. I mean, we're seeing the trend now that they're finally starting to put bearings where they belong.
Right.
Why has it taken them 50 years to put bearings to support the spools?
Yeah.
Why is it taking them this long to put...
Penn did an amazing job of that.
Penn did a great job of finally putting a support bearing in there.
For the drag. So when your drag's pulling, instead of it being metal on metal with the shaft,
right,
it rides on that ball bearing, and it's actually a good ball bearing. Now,
yes,
the difference is if you're fishing with a reel that you've paid $100 for or more, you've got really pretty darn good quality stainless steel ball bearings.
Right.
But if you're paying $30-$40 for a reel and you've got 10 ball bearings, those are the worst 10 bearings you've ever seen in your life.
Right.
I mean,
you'll be lucky if they're round.
Yeah, somebody in Pakistan threw them out in the desert and it didn't rust overnight.
Yeah.
It's stainless steel.
Exactly. You know?
I mean, they're just...
Yeah. And Finor, that lethal that we've been talking about, they've gone to double bearings on their spool. You know, what's the difference between one or two bearing? Well, if you look at it, they actually put a spacer in between the two, so you have more surface area to keep that spool from wobbling even more. There's almost no wobble in that spool.
Well, when the drag pulls off a reel, the spool tends to kind of cock and get out of alignment with the shaft.
Sure.
And on a standard reel, you've got this metal stainless steel rod that comes up the center, and you've got aluminum spool, and it's got to be a little sloppy, otherwise it would bind up.
Right.
And because as that drag's pulling, the spool's cocking over, you're getting real tight on the top and bottom edges, and it's but when you put the ball bearing in there, they put a cap over it, and it fits tight, and the ball bearing does the rolling, not the metal on metal.
Right.
So, I mean, hats off to, you know, I think I'm wrong, but I think Shakespeare was the first one to do it, and Penn kind of perfected it, and now everybody else is picking it up.
And, I mean, even they're going so far and beyond now with the bearings. I mean, all the bearings in the Cabo are ceramic now.
Which is a really good idea. You think you want stainless steel, but you get metal, salt, sand together.
Well, the key is it's stainless.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not stain.
Yeah, exactly. It's not stain-free, not rust-free. It's stainless.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like going paperless. You still use paper. You just use less of it.
Right.
So, yeah, but it's nice now that... And again, why has it taken the reel industry this long to put ceramic bearings? And we've been using them for years and other things.
Well, go back into the 1960s when Mitchell 300 made the reel that lasted for decades. I got guys who bought them in the 60s who are still using it.
Yes.
And they didn't have any ball bearings in them at all.
None. Not a one.
They were just bushings. Now, we don't turn a reel at 3,000 RPMs. And if I had my way, I would have a bearing top and bottom of the main shaft and none outside of that.
Yeah.
But if I told people I was going to sell them a two-ball bearing reel, they wouldn't realize I was doing it so it would last much longer for them. They would think, well, it's a cheap reel. It's no good. But the truth of the matter is, if you're not turning at 3,000 RPM, shoot a little oil in there every once in a while, you're not going to wear that bushing out.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't it's a fishing reel, not a small block Chevy.
Yeah, right. Okay. It's not a 327 with, you know, Mario Andretti at the helm.
So. It's a lot of these, and a lot of those Mitchells are still running strong. I mean, I work on a few of them here and there, and it's always the same problem with those Mitchells. The grease has gotten so old that it's gone stiff.
Right.
There's never a problem with bad bearings or bushings or gears going bad.
Well, they have no bearings, so, you know, it's just you clean the bushings up, you take the old grease out, you put the new grease in.
The grease got old. That's all it is.
Yeah. It's amazing. But, you know, I didn't even... You know, folks, this was not planned. We just started talking and yakking, and, you know, all of a sudden this whole bearing thing came up. But the truth of the matter is, I make a lot more money because people want a lot more ball bearings.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. I have to replace the reels more often. You know, they got to buy new reels. You're buying more and more reels because the more bearings you want, the more things to go wrong.
Yep.
And it's in a way, it's really good. And I guess maybe I shouldn't be saying this, because if people did catch on, I really wouldn't sell as many reels as I do.
And it's not just that. I mean, there's other things that we end up making money off of. It's, you know, the ball bearing count. I got to have 80 pounds of drag. You know, I've got to put 80-pound test line on that little bait caster, because that's what they do on TV. I have to have 400 yards of line in order to fish for snook against the mangroves.
The thing that I have fought against for years and I always felt guilty about was the whole line issue. I mean, years ago when I was first getting in the business, and this is probably 1985, I think, I'm so proud, and we had a guy come in from one of the factories, and I'm showing off all this line I've got and all these spools, and I'm all big and puffy, you know, and he says, well, how old is that? And I said, well, anywhere from a couple of days maybe to a few months old, you know, but I keep them in this, you know, closet here, and they're all nice, and they've got, you know, good conditions. It should, you know, he says, well, you know, if it's more than 6 months old, you're going to have to think about replacing it. Well, I ordered bunches of spools. Everything I even thought was 6 months old. I ordered new line. Now, mind you, this is 1985, maybe 1986. And so all these spools showed up. I'm opening a box of this brand new spool. The tournament ended in 1984. There's a flyer in there for a tournament that ended in 84. Yeah. And so this line had to be produced in, what, 82, 83? And it was like a year tournament. So
instantly, how do you know it hasn't sat in a warehouse for 2 years?
Well, I knew it because it was on the paper. They actually put a piece of paper in there with a tournament end date. And I got upset. And I went on a fight for my customers to let them know line goes bad the day it goes bad.
Exactly.
It could be weeks, months, years, or decades. Yeah. It braided line. If you're fishing in fresh water,
lasts forever.
You should never replace
and
that
even
line.
In salt
ever.
Water. Even in salt. I mean, the biggest problem that we have down here with braided line is the sun.
Yeah. Now, that's why I say it goes bad the day it goes bad.
Yeah. I grabbed one of my big spinning reels that I haven't touched in the last 6 months, and you know, time to get it out, clean it out. Big fish season's here, and I don't remember putting Invisibraid on that.
All the color was gone.
Once I spooled it up, I saw it was actually yellow underneath. And
took off the first 50 yards, there it's yellow.
Yeah.
It's funny, people don't realize it's all white when it starts, or grayish or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have to add the colors to
right.
it. And where Power Pro had that problem with the red, oh my God, you put red line on, your whole boat was red.
Yeah.
It came off everywhere. It looked like you had Bonita bleeding on the boat.
Yep.
And, but literally, I had mono on my one reel for, 13 years. And it was just as good as the day I put it on. And there was no reason to replace it. And people come in all the time, well, and the first thing I ask them is, why are you replacing the line? Well, it's been on there a year. Okay. What difference does that make?
Yep.
I just refuse to let the line companies make money off a propaganda lie.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. It's nothing but a lie.
Sure.
You can't say they're trying to mislead. You can't. It is a flat-out lie. There is no reason to replace your line every few months or once a year or anything else except to make the line companies more money. And
it's quite simple. When do you replace your monofilament? If it keeps breaking when you're tying your knot, it's time to replace it.
Exactly. When it goes bad.
When do you replace your braided line? When it starts casting crappy.
If it's not working right, then you replace it. But up until that
day, you're going to burn through it quicker than it ever rots.
Oh, yeah, you'll lose it. You'll get broke off. Yeah. You get a cut, tie knots on it. Little by little, it all goes away. But
even down here, I mean, we've got some of the most horrible conditions in the world. You know, for fishing gear.
This morning I had like two or three ants got up in my coffee cup and fell in. Now I'm looking for more. They did add a unique flavor to this. So, and this, when we were doing the show earlier, my whole council was covered with ants. Now they know I'm going to put them in my coffee. They're all hiding.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not an ant anywhere. I'm going to grab them, throw it. You know.
The word got out. They're on to you.
They're on the run. They're on the hide. Hey, they're good in coffee.
But yeah, it's some of the weird things that have come down the pike in the tackle industry. It's kind of funny. And fishing most of my life as a recreational fisherman, I've probably fallen prey to one or two of them, I'm sure.
Well, I did. And It's, but when somebody does that to me, I want to make sure it doesn't happen to the customers, because the consumer doesn't get that. You know, I'm in here 29 and a half years, and I've been ripped off by every single conceivable thing you can think of. And I just want to make sure that, you know, the public doesn't fall prey to the same problems that I've had from line companies and from other things and, you know, ridiculous ideas.
Well,
let's talk about, I would say, the most ridiculous idea I can think of.
Red line?
Okay, that's number two. We'll get to red line in just a minute. But the most ridiculous concept I can think of is, you don't tie a swivel on any of your braided line to attach your fluorocarbon because it'll spook the fish. That's got to be the most ridiculous concept I've ever heard of. Now, I don't tie a swivel in between my line and my leader when I'm doing most lures, because the swivel actually acts like a little split shot.
Right, right.
So when I pause...
I never do it. But I wholeheartedly agree with you. It's a ridiculous statement.
Because braided line is 100% visible to any fish.
Sure.
It's fiberglass, basically, at its core. You know, your fiberglass, Kevlar, Spectra, Zaymans, all these, you know, fancy names for everything. But it's basically a form of fiberglass in the beginning and end. And so it's visible. But when you get down, if you're using monofilament to fluorocarbon leader, then putting that swivel in, there's something else that maybe you don't want to do. But with braided, and the same guy who tells me you can't put a swivel between your line and your leader puts a split shot on.
Right.
Now, what is the difference between a chunk of lead and a piece of metal?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
There is no difference. There really isn't.
I can't figure out. A swivel is the best way. We had Sean from AFW here, and they produce some of the best swivels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sampo is the best. I'm going right on the line. I've told Sean, you guys make a great product, but they make a very good, affordable product.
Right.
Sampo makes the best swivels in the world. There's nothing like Sampo.
But they're expensive.
They're expensive, but they last for decades if you don't lose them. But when you put that swivel in there, you have the strongest connection between your line and your leader, because you can tie better knots. One doesn't cut the other one.
Right.
You get good 90% knots out of that. When you join the lines, you always have that the light line trying to cut the big line and all this other stuff. But I never got that. But now the only time I really don't want that there or a snap swivel is using most lures. Like an MR17, it is that mirror lure is so perfectly attuned to that twitching and everything else.
Right.
When you add the swivel in front of it, as soon as you pause the lure, the swivel sinks.
Right.
And now my lure isn't doing what I want it to do. I need that neutral buoyancy of the line and the leader to keep the lure running perfectly. But if I'm throwing the shrimp and I want it to sink and drift a little bit, put the swivel in there.
Throw it on.
Sorry, and it was a rant.
No, you're right. And it's no different than, you know, red disappears underwater.
Boy.
No, it doesn't.
Now, we have a military, and admittedly, the troops, the people, the boots on the ground, some of the best and brightest people in the world. Now, once you get up the ladder a little bit...
I wouldn't go that far. I saw some colossally dumb people when I was in the Marine Corps. I really did.
You know, but
we actually had a kid in our platoon that would count how many times he rotated his turret, because he was completely convinced by somebody else in the platoon that once he turned it more than 13 times in one direction, the turret would unscrew from the vehicle. So...
Okay, well, this is kind of proving
my
point
after
right here.
8 years in the Marine Corps, not all of them are the best and brightest.
All right, but I'm kind of throwing the break out there, because, I mean, we have a tremendous amount of soldiers come through here, and most of them are really, really good. Now, as you get higher up in the officer levels, not so much the best and brightest. Yeah. There's a couple pickles short of a club sandwich in a lot of them.
Exactly.
But even them... Over the last 100 and some years of making submarines, if red disappeared under the water, there would be a red submarine.
There'd be a red submarine.
And as far as I know, there's been a yellow submarine.
There's been yellow.
But I don't believe there's ever been red one.
And being a scuba diver, I've seen it up close. The color doesn't disappear. Our ability to see that color disappears. The water filters out that spectrum of color. And by the time you get down to 60 feet...
Now, when you're at 30 feet,
You're losing the red tone, but it does something unique.
It turns gray.
Well, it turns green at that
color. Yeah, at that color, it's a greenish color. Yeah, I'm colorblind.
At 30 feet, right. At 30 feet, if you cut yourself underwater, you're bleeding green like a Star Trek Vulcan. And that may even be where they got the idea from. But everything red turns green. It does not disappear. The perception of the color red disappears. Now you perceive red as green.
And that's 30 feet.
And that's at 30 feet.
And now, how much 30 feet of water do we have in this harbor?
No. And what is it, by the time you're 60, 70 feet?
By the time you're 60 feet, everything is bluish gray.
Well, it's like green. Watching a black and white TV.
No, it's more blue than anything else, because blue really, really penetrates the water.
But as you get down, the further underwater you get, the more black and white TV it looks. Yeah. Everything's kind of shades of gray.
Yeah. But that's why, you know, it's just the light being filtered out. If you take a flash photograph underwater,
all the colors are there
in the picture.
It's the absence of white light.
Yep. And it's, you know, and at the same time, you're sitting here telling me that your red line disappears underwater. Well, why the heck are you trying to sell me red lures?
Because a red lure should disappear underwater. The fish should be invisible to fish.
Right. So what good are your red lures?
A great point. I don't think anybody's ever brought up that point before. Where if red line disappears underwater and you've got a red lure, how do the fish ever find it?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I'm gonna steal that line.
But God, people do anything to sell tackle sometimes. It is funny.
But we don't.
No, we don't. It's the people that try and sell it to us.
Yeah.
That's where the problem begins.
Believe it or not, that's how I learned to tell my customers. You know, when you and I are talking to the customers, people don't realize it, but when we go to these tackle shows and we listen to the lines guys feed us, we're looking at that and going, yeah, right. Remember the guy that one lure had the ring on the nose and then two rings up on the head?
Yes.
Now, the ring on the nose is to get it to run shallow.
Right.
And use it more or less close to the very surface.
Right.
The next ring up makes it dive
a little bit deeper.
And the ring further back on it makes it dive the deepest, brings it much deeper in the water.
Right.
Well, obviously, this guy working for the company had never been asked the question, because we asked him, what are those three rings for? Very innocently. And he says, well, and he went back and he talked to one of the guys and he comes back out and says, well, this one's for the average angler, this one's for people with a little more experience, and this one's actually the pro setting, which, you know, your customers are never going to have to use, because, you know, they're going to be using this one because that's for the inexperienced angler, this one's for the moderate level, and this one's for the expensive. And we all looked at him and said, well, you know what? We don't need something with a pro setting on it, so we don't really need to buy that lure. And we just walked away, never bought one of them, and they're gone now. I mean, how can you produce a product and not understand what it is you made? Why would you?
I saw this the first Henry show that you took me to. And in my sarcastic jerk-off self.
Yes, that's why we're friends.
Grabbed a pen reel, went to the pen rep that was there, and showed him the spool tension screw on the side of the reel and said, what does that 710 mean? He looked at it and he says, well, I don't know. I think it might be a part number. I said, well, this reel here has got a bigger screw and it says 710 too. What's that 710 stand for? He says, well, I don't have any idea what it stands for. Then I turned the knob 180 degrees and said, yeah, it's oil. So half of these guys selling these reels don't even know what they do in their product. They don't even know. They're just paid to sell it.
And that's why we do our tent sale. I'm going to plug the tent sale again. Once you get to the owner of the company and the design engineers and these people, they actually know that if you turn 710 around, it's oil.
Right.
And when you're out here asking questions, the concept behind this was so you don't have to deal with the people that we've had to deal with.
Right.
You get to deal with the people we've had the pleasure of dealing with. And the Mike Rice of Penn, the Cameron Hughes, Barry from Star Rods, the Mark Nichols, the Eric Bachnick, all these guys, Charles from Rockport Rattle.
Yeah.
these guys know the product. They understand every intricate detail of these products.
Exactly.
That's what the show is about. So you do not have to put up with some guy standing there pretending like he's intelligent.
Right.
And let's face it, you know, once somebody becomes a fishing guide, it's always suspect.
Sure. No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And it's not even kidding. You're absolutely right.
The only problem is they get, it's not that part of it, is they get paid to say how good it is. They're either getting free product or they're getting money.
They either,
it's like reading on the internet.
Right, right. They're either getting free product or they're getting money and they're getting support. And or they're trying to, one or the other.
But they're being paid in one form or another. Because I always say there's two basic types of people that write on the internet. The ones who are getting paid to say something's good, or the ones who are complaining about something, because none of their friends will listen to them anymore because they're just a chronic complainer. The problem with this stuff on the internet is read back and forth and take it all with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Because the truth is now, like Penn's battle, what endeared me to Penn, and I can remember when Zebco was the best stuff before Quantum ever existed.
Yeah.
I remember when Penn had the best reels at one point. Yeah. I remember when Daiwa had the best reels. I remember when Shimano had the best reels.
Yeah.
And I remember when Quantum had the best reels. But what got me on the Penn bandwagon was the problems they had with the battle.
Yeah.
The problems were what convinced me I wanted to deal with Penn.
Yeah, because what an amazing concept. They fixed the problem.
Fixed the problem. Oh my God! Why didn't anybody ever think of this before?
No, and
let's have a problem and then go. Okay, we had six reels. All came back with the same problem. They got splashed with any water.
Yeah.
And you turn the handle and it would just freeze up.
Yeah.
And we called Penn up and said, "Guys, I got six reels and they're all locking up and they weren't even dunked underwater."
Yeah.
They sent a guy from South Carolina to the store, went back and actually called back. That impressed me more than anything. And said, "Frank, a part didn't get anodized, replace the darn reel."
Yeah.
You know.
And then they...
It'll never happen again.
And then they sent us a bucket of handles.
Oh, yeah.
Them out.
They had a problem with the handle. And the handle would just literally... The pad you're holding would just fall right off.
Yeah.
For no reason. You'd be reeling in something or doing something. And then, poof, set it in the truck and, boom, the handle fall off. Before we even knew there was a problem, they had buckets of handles here. We've given out hundreds of free handles because and that's what you want to do. It's like me. I know I make mistakes. I screw up. I make mistakes every day. The thing I strive most for is to be, you know, apologize when I make a mistake, fix the mistake. I don't want to hide that I messed up.
Well,
I want to fix it.
As much time as I've spent around the tackle industry and going to these shows with you, the one thing that I have realized is it's not easy sometimes to fix those problems. The one problem that always stuck out in my head was, again, the first Henry show that I went to with you. Some guy from the Quantum booth walked up to me and said, "You know, well, do you use these reels?" "Yeah, I do." "What could you change about them?" "Well, you need to quit making your anti-reverse bearings out of pot metal and start putting something in there that won't rust. Because if you ever got, I mean, and everybody who's ever used an older generation Cabo or Boca, if they get dunked, you know, they start feeling like a pepper grinder
right
away." And it was always that anti-reverse bearing corroding.
Replaced dozens or hundreds for people.
And it never did get fixed. In 10 years, it was never fixed.
Then all of a sudden they fixed them.
But yeah, they redesigned the reel.
Yeah.
But it's hard to make those changes in a production and keep costs down because it's retooling fees and stuff like that.
It costs tens of thousands of dollars to change something.
Right.
That's where, go back to Penn. I'm sorry, guys. Yes, I'm a Penn supporter because they had a problem. They retooled the reel. They reset the equipment, spent tens of thousands of dollars fixing the problem so that the consumer, because it would have been very easy just to leave them alone.
Yeah, and that's what most people who are on top do. They get complacent. They don't fix it. Look at the problems GM is having with their ignitions now.
Yeah.
And it's a known problem that's been there for a while, and the government's investigating because they got complacent.
Well, they got cheap.
Yeah.
And I don't care who you are. I mean, I spend whatever money I have to spend to fix my problems. And yep. It's just the way you should do it. So you made a little less money that year. It's not the end of the world. So don't go out to eat. You know, don't buy HBO, Cinemax, Showtime, and all the rest of them. Cut it down and get one, you know, or get none. Yep. I mean, fix your stuff, you know. And that's, as the owner of the company, that's what I'm supposed to do. I'm not supposed to, you know, just say, gimme, gimme, gimme. If you're not giving back, why should anybody give you anything? Yeah. That, to me, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. If life's not a two-way street, why are you bothering?
And that's why.
Has this been the biggest, you know, complaint bitch session you've ever had to sit through?
Oh, that's fine. We need it sometimes. But that's the exact reason that we don't want to let pro staff at our tent sale.
No.
Because...
And even...
Is
when
that
we've
guy
had
who's
some...
being paid by Penn or Shimano or Quantum, is he going to say...
Or Rapala, you know, or whoever.
This is a great reel, but there's a problem.
Now, I have watched Mike Rice, the head of Penn, selling Akuma reels and Quantum. I have watched Charlie from Quantum sell Penn and Shimano's, and I have watched these people high up in the organization... They're there to help the consumer, and they will talk to you about any reel, any brand, and tell you the good and the bad.
Yeah.
And because they know a lot about everybody's, you know. I mean,
they do.
Fishing business is a big sewing circle.
I'm going to bet you that Shimano knows more about the Penn Battle than Penn does.
No, I would think you picked the wrong company. I don't think they know if it's daylight or dark out.
No.
You know.
Shimano ran the Penn Battle through their torture test.
Yeah. And got their butt kicked.
Yeah. They couldn't break it. I mean, this is something that if a Stratic runs through 7 or 8 times successfully, then breaks, it's considered a good solid reel.
Mm.
And they couldn't break the battle.
We run the battles on the simulators a lot because it's the only reel that keeps up. Now, there is that one plastic washer down on the bottom. I'd like to see them replaced with Teflon. But as you said, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But we put those things through years and years of abuse in a matter of a few days.
Yes, absolutely.
Drags on them.
We're turning drag washers to dust. We're locking up reels. I mean,
I melted the cap off of a Shimano a while back.
Those simulators are a torture test in themselves.
We were at one of the shows, and everybody was playing on the simulators, and I had a Symmetry on there, and all of a sudden I looked down, and the cap was melted out of the spooler.
Yeah.
It was still working, but the cap literally had melted down a little bit. I was like, wow, I think we're going to have to replace this one. But now, that being said, I'm going to say I'm very happy with the Shimano products and the reels. They have a great longevity rate. And even though, and sometimes I would almost think they shouldn't, they still seem to hold up well.
Yeah.
Because we sell the Shimano stuff from $10.99. Guy came in, he bought a used reel at a someplace, you know, reconditioned reel, and he said he had a great buy on it. With tax and everything, was $15. I said, really? Let me see it. And I'm thinking, whatever. It's the one we sell brand new in the box for $10.99. I look at him, oh man, you don't want to see this. He's like, what? I said, no, you don't want to see this. You don't want to know.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, let me see it. I was like, ooh, he was upset.
Well, yeah, so. It's, you got to watch it. You got to do your research.
Got to
you
do your
really
homework.
You do.
We had a guy come in, and he's telling me about how inexpensive this rod was he was going to buy. And it was on some site somewhere, and with the shipping and everything, it was only about $45 more than we charged for it on the rack. So, you got
to
watch.
It's gotten to the point where, yes, things are on the internet, and yes, sometimes they're cheaper. Did it fall off the back of the truck?
Well, we almost quit selling reels for a while because everything had got so crazy. It was like going back to a period we had one time before where we literally did not sell fishing reels.
Yeah.
You would buy them for $80 and sell them for $81. Now, if you can't make 20% or 15-20%,
what's the point?
Well, I lose money. It's,
and we probably would lose more money in that deal than most other people because we take so much extra time with our customers that
I mean
that profit's gone in the first 10 minutes of conversation about the reel.
And so everybody says, you know, why are all the reels the same price? Because the manufacturers are learning that if you cannot make a profit so you can pay your rent, your payroll, your insurance, the utility bills, and all these other stuff, if you can't do that, you're not going to sell the reel. And you can't make money in it. You can't sell it. Because I love my job. And I mean, I really love being here, but I cannot do it for free.
No.
I don't have to have a lot, but I have to have something.
A little bit.
And so that's why the manufacturers got together. They petitioned the Supreme Court to uphold MAP pricing, manufacturer asking price. And now it's been upheld. So whether you're on an internet site or a brick and mortar store, you now can still come to a store and look at a reel, play with it, and everything else. So you're going to pay 10-15% more than if you had bought it, you know, on site somewhere during that previous time. But you can still play with it. You can get it. You can get it warrantied. You can get all that stuff.
Right.
And they're still here available.
Not refurbished. It's not stolen. It didn't fall off the back of a truck. It's not a factory second.
Right.
People don't realize that not only did the MAP pricing protect the manufacturers, it also did a lot to protect the consumer at the same time. I mean, Costa Del Mar takes it very, very seriously.
If you're
selling Costas under their cost, they will come in and shut you down and take their inventory back.
And which is a good thing. It keeps the product available for the consumers.
Right.
It actually keeps them there. If nobody makes any money, there are no products.
Right.
That's just is what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to do this for, you know, even though you love your job, you can't do it for free. And you can't, well, I shouldn't say I do it for free and I have to spend money on it some months. I don't get a paycheck every month. But, you know, it's still one of those things where it's a good job and it's a nice living. I'm not getting rich. I can't afford a big offshore boat.
If you want to make a small fortune, start with a big fortune and buy a bait shop.
Yeah, if you want to end up with a small fortune in the fishing business, start with a large one. I'm just talking to a guy this morning, and he just, all of a sudden, he's looking at his books. He's been doing this for a while, and he's looking, going, I think I'm going to have to get out. And I was like, yeah, it's tough business. Really tough business.
It is.
But on the other hand, we need to talk about some fishing.
Okay.
And, you know, every once in a while, guys, I know this is kind of a weird show, but what we're trying to do is tell you what to watch out for. Like that one lure with all the jointed things, and this was banned from tournaments. It was banned from the tournaments. You see it on a magazine. You see a whole page thing for
The Alabama reefs?
No, it's that one hard bait with the joints in it. It's like, and it's a minnow-looking thing.
Oh, okay.
And the reason it was banned from tournaments is
it works.
Is because nobody will buy it. Because you throw it out and it hits the water. If it hits the water up and down vertically, it'll go in the water and it works. If it hits the water with the flat side, it breaks. They break in half. They won't even hold together for a cast.
Wow.
Much less bringing the lure back in with a fish on it.
I know they've banned those Alabama rigs in quite a few of the bass tournaments.
Well, that's because it's a multi-hook rig.
Because it works.
Well, multi-hook rigs work. They also ban trolling in the bass tournaments because that keeps the bait in the water all the time.
Yeah.
And some things, they've never really wanted multi-hook rigs.
Is that a wonderful concept for a tournament?
What?
Go catch fish, but not too many.
Right. No, don't use too many. Yeah. But I don't know. I think it's, you know, you do have to sometimes when you're running a tournament, because I used to run a lot of them, and you have to draw the line somewhere. You have to say, okay, enough. This many hooks and no more. You can have a single hook and a trailer, but you can't have 10 hooks and 10 baits on one rig.
I use them. I love the Alabama rigs.
And they work great. I mean, the only problem I have with them on saltwater is you don't get just one fish, and then it's all a mess.
Well,
and it's trying to land fish on a sabiki rig.
That's okay. I use them for Spanish mackerel.
Yeah.
You know, why catch one piece of shark bait when I can catch five?
Now, keep in mind, if you're going to use Spanish mackerel for shark bait, it must be whole
condition
and legal size.
Legal size. They are a game fish.
You cannot chop a Spanish mackerel into pieces for shark. You
really
can't. It's against the law. You go out there and you get a chunk of Spanish mackerel sitting on the boat and one on your end of your hook.
Yep.
Obviously, that 4 inches or 3 inch, 4 inch bait is not 12 inches long.
Right.
and they have to be in whole condition. So,
and even if your chunk is over 12 inches long, you're still getting a ticket. It must be in whole condition.
Yeah.
You can't fillet it.
Now you can butterfly it.
You can butterfly it.
Which, it, butterflying is kind of like reverse of filleting.
Right.
You start at the tail and kind of work the knife along the backbone up towards the gills. And
then stop.
And then stop. Don't cut that chunk off. Just make the slice. And what it does is allow, when you're on the hook, allows that bait to flap together in the current.
It looks wounded.
It's wounded.
Yeah.
It's actually wounded.
Puts out a phenomenal amount of scent and blood. And it's a really good tactic for not just shark, a lot of fish.
So, anyway, we've been at this a while. So, what we're going to do is, why don't we take a break? We're going to end this session. We come all back right. And let's talk about some fun stuff, some fishing stuff.
Some fishing.
And, you know, some techniques, what fish are out there.
We've got the bitchiness and the grumpiness out of our system. So, now we're actually ready to talk about fishing.
Okay, we can do that. And we're going to give you a little bit. Just to lighten the mood a little bit.
Song. It really is. It's my favorite fishing song.
This is Fish and Frank, and in the chair across from me is Captain Kale. And thank you guys so much for listening today. Say goodbye, Kale.
Goodbye.
Thanks, Captain Kale. We're going to let this play out. We're loaded down with so much stuff. Mike can hardly steer. Hey, watch out for the stuff. When he opens in a pontoon boat. Now, you can go to the Die Upers website and actually, you know, load the song, and it's only a couple bucks or something like that, but it's a good song. It's a perfect day for fishing, drinking beer, and telling lies. It's a little bit like heaven when you're fishing with the guys. Boy, they got that right, didn't they?
They did, too.